You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Disaster Falls, the title of Stefan Gerson's memoir, has a double meaning. Disaster Falls is the name of a rough stretch of Utah's Green River that's popular with whitewater rafters, and it's a phrase that describes, at least in part, how Stefan felt after Owen, his 8-year-old son, drowned there during a family vacation in 2008. In his book, which the Library Journal's Rachel Dreyer described as diamond sharp, meticulous and breathtaking, Mr. Gerson describes how he, his wife Allison, and their surviving son Julian coped with their grief over Owen's death while they tried to hold on to their memories of him and to figure out how to continue living without him. Stefan Gerson is a cultural historian and a French studies professor at NYU. His book is published by Crown. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
First, please accept my condolences on your loss. The story you tell is very moving.
Thank you.
You've said that you started writing about Owen right after his death, that at first, weren't you driven by a need to get down on paper everything that you could remember about him before your memories started growing fuzzy?
Yeah, two weeks after he died, I started this journal. I hadn't journaled since I was 20 years old, and I started writing about what I saw, what I felt, what people said around me. It was almost kind of a compulsive need to keep a record of this kind of extraordinary new world we were entering.
And there's also that fear that you're going to start misremembering family stories.
Some of the things I was writing were memories of Owen. I was afraid of forgetting these memories, so I would transcribe them. I did this for months until sadly I couldn't come up with new memories. But also I was also writing that what I saw around me, what my surviving son Julian, who was 11 at the time, would say and would do, perhaps for him and for others as well, and what my wife would say, how she would interact with people as well. I'm a historian by training, and perhaps part of me was keeping a record, a chronicle of this time.
You've met other parents who've lost children since Owen died. Is this fear of forgetting something you found that you often had in common with them?
It's not something we discussed. I find that grief, and especially grief for a child, is so individual that people go about it different ways. So we weren't so much comparing notes in that way. But certainly when I would meet with, there were three or four bereaved parents whom I saw regularly for a few years. We talked about our children. We talked about what we felt. We talked about how difficult it was sometimes to interact with others.
And you, as you describe it here, your feelings of grief and guilt were different than the ones experienced by your wife, Julian, and other relatives and friends.
Right. So I should say a few words about the circumstances of the accident in which my son died. It was a rafting trip organized by a company. It was the first day of the trip, and we arrived at these rapids called Disaster Falls. It just so happened by chance that I was in a ducky, kind of an inflatable kayak, with Owen, who was 8, whereas Julian was in a big raft piloted by guides, and so was Allison. So the circumstances of the accident, as we came to call it, were quite different. I was with Owen in the raft, in the water. I was the last to see him. And as a result, I think that my relationship to the accident, the way I thought about it, but also my senses of guilt were sharper.
They weighed more heavily on you than they did on Allison. We should point out that you couldn't rationally be blamed for what happened. You'd complied fully with all of the tour company's safety rules and even checked individually with your guides before you set out on the duck boat. Do you still feel guilty? Or can you now accept Owen's death as the result of a terrible accident that occurred, at least in part, because the tour company's safety precautions were insufficient?
I think a lot of the work I've done over the past few years has been to revisit the accident. One of my initial responses was to go back to the accident in so many ways and look at all the factors. How did this happen? How was it that we woke up one day on what was supposed to be a normal day, ended up losing our son? And so I would look at safety regulations, what happened in terms of the guides. I looked at my own personality. I looked at Owen's own personality. I tried to examine every factor. I looked for understanding as a way of dealing with my sense of guilt, until eventually I had to accept that there was only so much I could understand.
How many other people were with you on the rafting trip? Were there other children?
There were, if memory serves, 20 passengers, as they call them, and 7 or 8 guides. There were other children, yes. And the trip was advertised as open to children 7 and above.
Family friendly.
Exactly.
And Owen was a few months shy of 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You've written that other members of the group ran into trouble almost as soon as you approached the falls. Didn't some even fall into the river?
Two other people capsized behind us, and there was a fair level of commotion in these on these falls.
But in your case, the duck boat in the rapids hit at least 2 rocks before you and Owen capsized. You saw him briefly in the water when you both surfaced, but didn't you lose him again when you were swept underwater by the current? You were fighting for your own life.
We hit a rock. We went up 90 degrees. We ended up in the water, Owen and I. We were a few feet away, too far to grab him or touch him. But there was that second during which our eyes locked, and I had a second to say something to him. I could say one thing to him. And the only thing I could remember from the safety briefing was keep your feet above water, which is what I said. And then the current pulled me under, and I hit rocks. I couldn't come up for air. The thought that I was going to die crossed my mind, as well as the thought that what is happening to Owen, if this is happening to me. And that was the last anybody saw him.
My guest is Stefan Gerson. His book, Disaster Falls, A Family Story. You started writing about it immediately, but it took you a year before you actually could write about that part of the story.
Right. So for 4 years, I kept this journal, this compulsive, meticulous journal filled with memories and observations and thoughts. And then 4 years later, after the accident, I began writing what became this book, Disaster Falls. And it's in the course of that writing that eventually I summoned the force, perhaps the courage as well, to write about the accident itself.
Your description of the accident is only a small part of this book. Most of it's devoted to describing your family life while Owen was alive and how you, Allison, and Julian interacted with and supported each other after Owen's death. Didn't someone tell you that 80% of couples divorce after the death of a child?
It's one of the images we have about what happens after the loss of a child. I think that losing a child is so huge. It's so frightening to all of us. It's so present in our movies, in our novels, in our plays, that all kinds of images and myths perhaps as well surround it. And one of them is that bereaved couples do not survive this shock, this trauma. And people did tell us that early on.
But you looked into it. Is it accurate at all?
I did a little bit of research. You know, I'm not a psychologist of any kind, but I couldn't find any studies that supported that. But certainly, it was part of the conceptions that we felt as well about the difficulty of surviving together.
Is the thinking that formerly happy couples end up divorcing because they blame each other for what happened, or do they split up because they just can't comfort each other while they're grieving themselves?
I think people who told us that probably entertained very different ideas. My sense is that for most people, the notion is that this loss is so profound, it destabilizes you in such a deep way that you kind of fall back into yourself and that it becomes very difficult to care about anybody else.
Allison kind of drew strength and comfort from friends and family while you comforted yourself with books and by doing research. She stayed in constant motion, and you holed up in your office and read.
Our modes of grieving were radically different, and what happened during those first months and that first year is that we both learned a lot about ourselves as we grieved and about the other. And it's true that Allison's mode of grieving was physical. She would move constantly. She would jog. She would take walks. Her mode of grieving was also very social. She accepted every invitation. She brought people in. She trusted that people had something to give to her. And part of that, I think, had to do with her relationship with Owen and her desire to share Owen.
But is it a better? I'm sure you can't really answer this question, but is it better to grieve as a group or to grieve alone and work it out for yourself?
I'm not sure there's anything better. I think that we all have different ways of grieving, and perhaps sometimes we need to be alone and sometimes we need to be as a group. I think what worked for Alison was to be with others, but not to be part of a group. She didn't go to a support group for long in any way. For me, grieving was much more internal. It had to do with seeking solace in the past, with other people who had grieved. I read poetry. I read about ordinary people who had lost children, who had written about that during the Civil War or in England in the 19th century. I felt that these people in the past were always available. They were always there to grieve with me in the way I wanted at any time of the day.
We don't have time to discuss everything that you've written about here, the death of your father, Jillian's departure for college, Allison's unexpected pregnancy, and the birth of another son. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What did you name him?
Elliot.
And how old is he now?
3.
Before you go, I think many people have no idea what to say to a parent who's lost a child. Many people are so afraid that they're going to say the wrong thing that they don't say anything, or they just simply say something that sounds a little religious. Do you have any advice?
What I found most powerful, and again, just speak from my personal experience, were the people who managed to describe exactly what was happening in the most spare words. This is horrible. This sucks. I'm so sorry this happened. In a very economical, direct way. This made me feel that I was not so alone with this loss.
And were there any things that people said to you that upset you so that listeners can avoid repeating them?
The hardest thing I heard, and I was very fortunate. I mean, I met other bereaved parents who were told by family members or others, you know, it's time for you to move on very early on. And that nobody ever told us that. The hardest thing I heard was, you know, I'm going to hug my child a little harder tonight, which made me miss my own son a little more. But overall, what was most difficult was silence. And it's better to say something than not to say anything at all.
But this is something that never goes away, even if you write a book.
No, it never goes away. But it changes, and you learn to live with it, and you keep the presence of your child.
My guest has been Stephen Gerson, who's a cultural historian and a professor of French studies at New York University. His book, Disaster Falls, A Family Story, is published by Crown. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, even though the story is so sad.
Thank you for having me.